Welcome to the Tampa St. Pete Sports Connection Radio Show, live from Ferd's Sports Bar and Grill, providing a positive perspective from the peewees to the preps to the pros in Champa Bay. Now, here's your host, Mike Rickard.
What's really fascinating is to think that this kid is still so young. He's 17 years old, and that means he's got another 10 to 15 years of high caliber performance left in front of him, and he's already running very close to world record times in the 200 meters. So it's very exciting to watch him run.
Let's talk about your career as far as running as well.
Well, as you know, I ran at Hillsboro. I went to Florida State to play football. And back in those days, schools didn't really see the value in spring sports for football athletes. So I was not able to pursue my track and field participation in college. Did it in the intramural sector. But it's always been my favorite sport, and I continue to run in masters competitions. They're in five-year age brackets, so I'm in the middle of the 65 to 69 age bracket. I haven't competed in a while because of some health issues, but I hope to get back on the track pretty soon. It's just a lot of fun to get back in the starting blocks in the 100 meters and the 200 meters and see how I measure up.
All right. I've got a goal for you then. I went back to Iowa this year for the Drake Relays, which is near and dear to my heart because I participated in them several times. Well, eight times. And I told Barry Smith that next year, bucket list, he and I are going to go. But I didn't think about the trifecta. And you should be going more so than he, even though he loves track and field. You set a goal to participate up there next year, and you'll have two of the biggest fans in the stands, and I'll get a bunch of Iowans cheering for you. You'll have the biggest fan club of anybody participating, and that'd be great on the Blue Oval if we're watching our buddy Chris Griffin.
I will do my best, and it's funny you.
I'm going to stay on you,
Barry. Well, stay on me, man. I need it. But Barry, being an All-American wide receiver at Florida State and a first-round draft pick of the Green Bay Packers, he did it the right way. He was a national class high hurdler, and so when he was about to sign his scholarship at Florida State 2 years before I did, his dad said to the coaches, "Well, Barry can still run track, right?" And they said, "Yes." Well, his dad was smart and put it in the hand wrote it into the margin of his scholarship papers. So Barry was able to run track during the spring while the rest of us were playing spring football.
I didn't know that.
Oh yeah. Yeah. And he continued to perform at a national caliber level. Great, great high hurdler. So Barry got to run, where I did not, but hey, it's all water over the dam and everything's good.
Well, I was texting you late last night because I was watching the NCAA men's finals track and field with Florida Gators ended up being national champs in Eugene, Oregon. I know that doesn't make you happy, but at least it's somebody from Florida.
Well, Florida State finished fourth. Fourth isn't first, but it's pretty darn good. And I think I've told you before, I was raised in a, even though I went to Florida State, I was raised in a Gator family. So I'm not a Gator hater. I like to see the University of Florida do well in anything. So I was happy to see them. And, of course, today we've got the last day of the women's competition. So we'll see who comes out on top that way.
Look forward to that. Okay, so let's change gears. So you graduate, you're on the football team, and then you get your law degree. And, a very successful law degree. And then you started doing some volunteer work for the NCAA, and that's where we come with this next topic, NIL.
Yep. Yeah, I spent 12 years total of service on the NCAA Infractions Committee and the Infractions Appeals Committee. So I learned from the inside out the NCAA rule book and how it's enforced, how the enforcement staff does its work. That ended, my service ended about 2013, continued my law practice, which from which I retired about 5 years ago and became a mediator and now that I'm not on the committees any longer, several schools have hired me, retained me to represent them and make arguments on their behalf in front of the committees that I used to sit on. So I've stayed involved in NCAA enforcement law, watched it develop for now close to, or a little over 20 years. And a lot of things have changed in those 20 years. So given the fact that I was there when a lot of the current rule book was written, I heard a lot of cases, and now I'm litigating a lot of cases. I kind of know what's going on in the NCAA enforcement world.
Well, you and I have discussed this, and it's reared its ugly head quite often of late, this NIL, and I respect Kirk Herbstreit for, you know, obviously the knowledge that that gentleman has, and he's one of the first that this, he said, this NIL is just going to be nothing but an absolute headache at the school level. They're not going to be able to enforce it at the NCAA level. And it's already starting to get out of hand. What's your position on it?
Well, it's my position on the first instance is it's here to stay. The Supreme Court, United States Supreme Court, has made it very clear that the types of restrictions that would prevent compensation for NIL are not going to be enforceable. And as you also know, 23 states around the country have instituted legislation that restricts or that limits restrictions on student athlete compensation. The thing about it is that once that Pandora's box is opened, as Kirk Herbstreit has observed, it's very, very difficult to control it, especially because, as I said, the Supreme Court has made it clear that very few restrictions are going to be enforceable. And the NCAA is kind of staying away from enforcing its NIL rules because, first of all, they have a very limited staff these days, enforcement staff. And secondly, they know that the second they try to enforce it, they're going to get hit with another lawsuit that's going to probably go all the way to the Supreme Court and do even more damage to their ability to enforce any rules, not just the NIL rules, but any rules. So, look, people have said for years that it's unfair that student athletes are not compensated, and I think one can make an argument that that's true, that it is unfair. But be careful what you ask for, because you're going to get it, and now you're getting it, which is the collectives that are being formed. Boosters and fans are coming together to form collectives so that they can pool their money and let prospective student athletes know that if you come to their school, that there's going to be a pool of money that can be used to compensate those student athletes for appearances, for autographs. And the schools that have more money are going to be able to convince the kids that that's the school they should go to because there's going to be more NIL opportunity. The real issue is that the NCAA rule says that student athletes can be compensated for name, image, and likeness, but the money cannot be used explicitly to induce a student athlete to come to that school. I can't be a booster who says, I've got a car dealership and I'll pay you $5 million to come to FSU and do ads for my car dealership, because that's inducing that student athlete directly to come to that school. But what's happening is that the student athletes can read and listen, and they see which schools have the most money in their booster base to offer them for appearances and the kind of things I mentioned just a minute ago. So they're going to go to the places that have the biggest pool of money because they know that's going to offer them more opportunity to use their name, image, and likeness. So, look, people have said it's unfair. If, in their view, fairness is now being balanced, you got to put up with the consequences, and that is that it becomes much more professional and much less amateur. And that's what we're going to have to face. And look, it's going to be a different world in 10 years, Mike. I don't think we're going to see any restrictions on compensation, because I think the courts are going to say that they're unenforceable. And then you're going to see essentially college sports become professional in the sense that the kids can be compensated at every level. So I think that's what we're going to see in at least 10 years, maybe even five.
I want to introduce you to Ben Botham. He's a young man that joined me, and he's got a question. He's a lot brighter than me, by the way, too, Chris.
Hey, Ben.
Hey, how's it going? So I was recently reading a little academic study for kind of arguing that NIL should be used specifically for baseball players because there's a lack of minority talent going into the sport, specifically from North America, because a lot of athletes are able to get kind of loans or kind of borrow against their talent in the Dominican or overseas. And so they're arguing that these NIL deals will help encourage minorities to participate more so in baseball, where they haven't had the money to, train and kind of build up, their talents, seeing coaches and experts to get better. Do you think that this is an accurate take, or do you think that this is only going to increase the disparity?
You know, it's a hard thing to say. Keep in mind that everything, all of this is pushing control, if you will, to the marketplace as opposed to the rule book. So, look, I love baseball. I love college baseball. Florida State's always had a great program. We used to walk next door from our spring football practice and sit in the stadium and watch the end of the baseball game on those spring days. But you have to face the fact that student athletes in other revenue sports like football and basketball probably are going to be able to command a higher price and more NIL deals than student athletes in other sports, be it baseball, track and field, and others. So I don't think it can be questioned that the result that you just described could occur and probably should occur, but you have to then ask yourself, if I've got a booster who's got $5 million in his or her pocket and wants to use that money to get somebody to come and compete at that school, are they going to do it for a football player, a basketball player, or a baseball player? And that's really what's going to drive the market. It's going to drive where the dollars go, and it might be a good thing for minority athletes, minority student athletes, but whether it's good or not isn't really going to be the determining factor. It's going to be what's driving the market and who can command a higher price because they are of greater value in the marketplace. And so that's just market economics 101.
Well, we're seeing the same thing in the world of golf at the professional level. And the bottom line on all this, Chris Griffin, is money's going to drive sports, and we either accept it or get out of the way.
Well, and that's true, and the argument has always been made, and it's a legitimate argument, that money has been driving sports and is driving sports, and all you have to do is look at the salaries that people like Nick Saban and Jimbo Fisher and other top-tier football coaches and basketball coaches command, and money's driving that part of the sport, and money's going to start driving the student athlete side of the sport as well. So it's a function of living in a capitalist system, which is where we live, and it's what drives this country's economics, and it always will. So money's going to drive everything, not just sports.
All right. Well, now I'm going to get a hold of Barry. We're gonna be your coaches from the side. We're gonna watch your rehab.
You got it.
Your rehab progress. We'll put together this this plan to be the end of April 2023, cheering on our buddy as he's flying down the blue oval at the Drake Relays. And I didn't even know the announcer. I might have to feed him a little little bio information. And his name's Mike. Feed Mike a little bio information on Chris Griffin as you cross the finish line. So
the only thing I'll disagree with Mike is I might be running down the track. I doubt that I'll be flying, but that's just a matter.
It's all relative. It's all relative at our age. We still feel like we're flying, right, brother?
That's right. That's exactly right.
Okay, well, finish your birthday weekend and have some fun with your grandson, and I appreciate you taking time. And you get down here to Ferg's, I'll get Barry, Correll Barry, and we'll have some beverages on me and on Ferg and have some fun.
All right, man. Good to talk to you. Take care.
You too. Chris Griffin, right. And, you know, it's kind of cool to have someone that you know, lays it out as it is. You know, that's the reality of the world of sports, yeah. Unfortunately.
I mean, heck, I would have loved to take an NIL deal. You kidding me? Do a little car
dealership? Of course you would have.
Make a couple extra bucks. I had a couple rough nights where all I was eating was ramen noodles all night long, and you know, it's like, man, you know, a little car dealership ad or endorsing a local restaurant wouldn't be half bad.
Well, you know what? And at the local level, you know, some of these powerful high schools, those kids walk into a diner or you know, or a restaurant, they're getting their grub for free.
Oh, sure. Yeah. I mean, those are all the little things that, you know, have always been happening, but now finally can officially happen.
Well, and that's a very good point on your end about the young kids getting involved. All right. Well, young kids don't get involved in this. This is the sport of kings we're going to talk about right now. And what did I do with your pick?
Oh, picks, I think it's right here.
All right. There. Now, he's been kind enough to take time, and I'm sorry that was delayed, but Bob Bauer joins us, Tampa Bay. He's a handicapper. How are you, my friend?
Pretty good, Mike. Pretty good, thank you.
Well, this is the final leg of the Triple Crown, and, you know, it's kind of bittersweet. I mean, this is the time of year where there's so much focus on the world of horse racing that you love so near and dear, but your interest never wanes, but, you know, the surface public fan does after this event.
Well, yeah, and also there's no Triple Crown up for grabs this year or anything like that. You know, the Triple Crown winner or the Derby winner, you know, didn't run in the Preakness, but he's coming back today, and you know, he might have a chance. Rich Strike, you got to admire his connections. They gave him a good long rest after the Kentucky Derby, and he's going to come back to fire his best shot, and we have another one in the same boat, so to speak, and that's Mo Donegal, number 6, from Todd Pletcher Barn, and he's been rested since the Derby also, and he ran and won the Wood Memorial before the Derby with a big speed figure, and he might, you know, have had a tough time in the Derby. Now he's ready to come back and fire a good shot, and I think it might be between those two, and then you have the number 1, who we the people, who could be a real troublemaker, won the Peter Pan over the Belmont track here. An excellent prep and got a big speed figure and comes from the barn of celebrity restaurateur Bobby Flay. And they're
really?
Big, yes, and they're big New York connections. They love to win in New York. And this one, We the People, I would say, has been pointed to the Belmont. And all the cards are on the table, and he's the one that if he runs back to the way he ran in the Peter Pan, he'll be very tough to beat, I think.
Well, that'll
let the one post be down inside. Flavian Platt is riding him, who rode him to victory last time, and Flavian Platt, for people who don't know him, doesn't have much of a reputation on the East Coast. He just moved his tack to the East Coast the last couple of months, and he's been winning races left and right. And he was big on the West Coast. He was big at Santa Anita and Del Mar and the California tracks. Now he's trying his luck in the East here. So I'm going to play a 1-4-6 exact box in the Belmont.
1-4-6. You heard it there, folks. I've got my young protege sitting across from me, Ben Botham, and we just did a little friendly. He's going with Barber Road, and I'm going chalk because I don't know as much as you. I'm going Rich Strike, so that's our little one-on-one bet.
Well, good luck. That's the thing about horse racing. Nobody really knows.
You see the way he said that? Well, good luck, you idiots. All right. So
stay at the dog track.
Yeah. So why don't you tell our audience, because they'll listen to you, where you're going. I'll quit interrupting.
I think the 6... Mo Donegal is worth a win bet because probably won't be the favorite. The 1, We the People, will probably be the 2-1 favorite. And Rich Strike, the Derby winner, will probably be a decent price, 3 or 4-1. So if you really like Rich Strike, that's a good price to come back and bet him again. And I'll put those three in an exacta box, 1-4-6, and you just might cash your ticket.
There you go, folks. 1-4-6. And we brought this up last time before the Preakness. You can actually go out to Tampa Downs, even though there's not live racing, for all these races and place a bet, right?
Oh, sure. There's simulcast wagering every day there, 7 days a week, in air-conditioned comfort. And you can watch racing from all over the country and sometimes from around the world and watch it and bet on it right there.
Do they have a sports book for other sports out there, too?
Not at present. That is supposedly coming. That I believe only the Hard Rock Casino has it now, but there's supposed to be attempts to get legislation to move it to other sports venues too. And whether that happens or not, I'm not privy to that, so I don't know that. But Tampa Bay Downs also has a poker room and golf instruction 7 days a week all summer long.
I love the fact I still got to get over there for my golf show. I went back to my home state in late April, and I used to do a lot of business with Prairie Meadows, and they're kind of the major players in that region. And they now, and I must space out, but they had a Caesars sports book within the facility at Prairie Meadows. So for the gamblers, it's a mecca. It's heaven.
That's the way seems the way it's going, that the racetracks that are associated with casinos have financial backing. Although Tampa Bay Downs is doing very, very well. They have record attendance and handle the last few seasons.
All right. So how do people listen to you? Anything today that you've got on Radio St. Pete?
No, I'm not on Radio St. Pete today.
Well, you are right now.
Well, I mean, every day, but I'm on Radio St. Pete with the Race of the Day every day from Tampa Bay Downs. And I'm on twice a day with my handicapping picks during the racing season, which starts the day before Thanksgiving and ends on Kentucky Derby Day. So basically that's from late November till the first weekend in May.
Okay, one
cover Tampa Bay Downs racing completely. We are the official radio station of Tampa Bay Downs.
That's beautiful. One last goofy question from a guy does. All the years you've been into it, I revel in the names that these people have on their horses. Skippy Longstocking. Now, who in the hell would think you'd name a horse Skippy Longstocking, Bob?
You know, you never know where the names come from. Sometimes a little bit of a piece of the mom's name and the dad's name or something, they put them together and come up with a name. Or maybe Skippy was the owner's nickname, so he named the horse after himself. You just don't know how they come up with these names.
Yeah, but they're definitely unique, aren't they?
Yeah, and sometimes they come up with tough ones to befuddle the race announcer.
Oh, yeah, especially on the call, Skippy Longstocking.
Yeah,
holy hell.
Trip over your syllables, I'm sure.
Oh, my word. Well, my friend, I appreciate it. Of course, the Belmont Stakes on NBC starts at 4 o'clock, the coverage. But post time for this is 6:44, and looks like it might be a nice race, and the weather conditions look
Yeah, track ideal. Is fast.
Yeah. All right, my friend. I look forward to talking to you next year, and one of these days you got to come down to Ferg's, and I'll buy you lunch for all your efforts. Lunch and beverages.
Well, I'll take you up on that, Mike. Okay.
Yeah, do that. All right, Bob.
Okay, let's cash your ticket today.
Okay. And that's 1-4-6. 1-4-6, right, Bob Bauer. He's the man. Thanks, buddy.
This is handicapper Bob Bauer wishing you good luck at the races today.
I love it when he does that at the end there. So what's our wager going to be on, pal? You got Barber Road 10-1.
Yeah, he didn't sound too confident on me.
Couple
there.
Of idiot picks.
Yeah, he didn't like that.
What did he say? Much. Good luck.
Yeah, good luck over there.
Good luck with that.
See, my thing, I was really good at picking dogs at the racetrack down at what's it called, Derby Lane.
Yeah,
I loved going to Derby Lane, and I was so sad to see that they banned dog racing down here in Florida. And that was a sad day, but it was still a lot of fun over there all the time. And you know, I love doing the, you know, what was it, picking the top three dogs, and you could pick them in any order. I forgot what that, if it was like Quinella or Superfect. I don't remember. But it was always.
You're asking the wrong guy. You should have asked Bob. But I don't think you should talk about the dogs.
Yeah.
Because that's I'm going to get hold of your old coach here.
Oh yeah, yep. He's I'm sure he's ready to go, ready to answer the call.
Do a little history of your years there and coach as I'm efforting him.
Oh yeah, so I'll do a little intro to.
And I'm going to leave it to you as I take a little break as well.
Yeah, I'll do a little intro here on to Coach Hardy. He's spent 16 seasons with the Savannah State Tigers. He began there in 2006. He's coached at a few other schools, but Savannah State, he spent the longest. He led the Tigers to 2013 berth in the regionals, where they had the pitching of Kyle McGowan, who went on in the future to win a World Series championship with the Washington Nationals. And Coach Hardy's had a really good season this year, where several of the players have been named to all kinds of interesting things. And so now we have Coach Hardy here on the radio. How's it going, Coach?
I'm doing well. How you doing?
Doing really well. I appreciate you coming on once again. I gave a brief little intro to who you are and the time you've spent at Savannah State. Do you mind giving our listeners a little brief bio of who you are and what you've done there?
Okay, appreciate it, Ben. My name is Carlton Hardy, head baseball coach at Savannah State University in Savannah, Georgia. I've been at Savannah State as the head baseball coach since 2006. And I appreciate Ben having me on the board, and look forward to having a conversation about baseball here, Ben.
Oh yeah, I'm super excited. I made sure to wear my Savannah State shirt. For once, I'm not wearing a Hawaiian shirt, as you saw me wear one of those almost every day to practice.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, so this season, I want to congratulate you. Once again, you were named the 2022 Coach of the Year. That's a great achievement. I know you were named the Coach of the Year back in 2013, so congratulations once again for earning that honor.
Thank you.
Yeah, so this season, I'll talk to you a little bit about that. You guys went 33-10 in the regular season and 28-2 in the conference, and you had several players named to high honors, with Joe Smith being named the 2022 SIAC Player of the Year. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Yeah, Joe had a terrific year for us. He actually led Division II baseball in hitting at the end of the regular season, tournament including. I think he finished fifth or sixth in the country. Joe actually has been named to several postseason All-American lists, All-Southern Region, ABCA first team. We had three pitchers who were first team, all SIAC members. Two of my outfielders, Joe included, were all first team. So we had a good year individually, and we had a good year collectively.
Well, that's great to hear. I pulled up some of his statistics here. He batted .470 on the year with 70 hits, 9 doubles, 9 triples, 9 home runs, and 41 RBIs, and slugging .832, which is great. And for those who haven't seen Tiger Field, that's a big field to be accomplishing those statistics there.
One of the hardest fields, one of the toughest fields in the country to hit home runs. It's a pitcher's park, but Joe, again, had a phenomenal season. He's a phenomenal player, good student athlete, just a model kid, comes from a good family, and we're glad to have him.
Yeah, and you said that six other Tigers were named to the all-conference list, and three of Savannah State's biggest stars have been named to the 2022 HBCU All-Star Game, which happened at the Atlanta Braves' Truist Park. Can you tell me a little bit about that event for your pitchers and players?
Yeah, so we had two pitchers. Both pitchers were first-team All-SIAC. And Joe, who was the Player of the Year of the conference, had an opportunity to go out to Truist Park and represent Savannah State. Jose Santiago was one of our pitchers, actually started the game for one of the teams. Joe started the game at center field, and Enrico Peel, and this was his second appearance in this All-Star game. HBCU, I think it's called MVP HBCU All-Star Game. That was his second appearance in 2 years. He actually closed out the game for the winning team.
Wow, that's great. I know during my time there, I was able to play a little bit with Rico, and we had a lot of fun down there in the bullpen, and I'm sure we gave you a laugh once or twice down there, so I'm glad to hear he was doing well.
Yeah, I've heard a lot of stories about the bullpen during the course of games.
Oh, man. Well, I hope we didn't cause you too much stress. But, you know, so I wanted to talk to a little bit because, you know, it is College World Series. And in 2013, you coached the Tigers all the way to a regional. And that was in the conference, the MEAC, the Mid-Eastern Athletic Conference. And so can you tell me a little bit about that regional berth that you led the Tigers to?
That was one of the most enjoyable experiences I've had as a head coach in college over my 22 years being in this position. It was the first time that Savannah State had ever made a regional in any sport, and baseball was the first team to do it. We had a great run during the regular season, a great run during the tournament, and I thought we competed well in the national tournament at the Florida State Regional. Unfortunately, we came up short, but it was an experience like no other.
Yeah, and the Tigers were led by some amazing pitching with Kyle McGowan. He was a stud for y'all at Savannah State.
He was. Kyle went undefeated his senior year up until his last game and started. Some of the accomplishments, in my opinion, he had. He started, I believe, 15 games that year. And the 15 games, he had one game where an opposition scored more than 4 runs. So his first 14 starts, he had given up 4 runs or less. And yes, he was a true number one. We were glad to have him. He was fortunate to be drafted in the free agent draft in 2013 by the Los Angeles Angels. And 4 years later, he made his major league debut, and he was in the major leagues for a good 3-4 year run.
Yeah, and you know, with your coaching, I mean, you always hammered throwing strikes, and that was obviously a great tip and a great coaching to help lead you guys that far. I know I wasn't always the best at doing that, but still, we had a good time there. And can you tell me what it's like, you know, how does the coaching or the game plan change when teams advance to the regionals and super regionals? Because, you know, you're facing teams that sometimes you wouldn't face, and can you tell me what that's like?
It's, you know, it's the challenge, it's the opportunity to compete against some of the best teams in the country. As far as myself personally, we try to instill in our players that even the first game of the year, we want to play it like it's a championship, so that when we do get an opportunity to be in that moment, we've been preparing the entire year. You know, things are a little bit more fine focused. The ability to manufacture runs, the ability to attack the strike zone and make plays is what the game of baseball is about. And so it just becomes a little bit more fine-tuned when you get to postseason.
So does the pitching strategy change at all, or do you tend to focus more on starting pitching, or do you like to go with the bullpen, or does that kind of change from season to season with you for going into the postseason?
I think it changed from season to season. You get in the postseason, it's a little different from conference season. In regards to conference, you're playing the same team 3 times in a row. In the postseason, in a 14 regional, you're subject to play anywhere from 2 to 3 different teams during that regional. So each game is a game in itself. The goal, of course, is, and we try to preach this throughout my history as a head coach, is that we try to win every pitch, and we just take the process. Win every pitch, win every outing or out, win every inning, and then at the end of the game, we'll look at the end result and see where we are.
Well, that's great. And we had a guest on earlier. He was talking to us about the NIL deals. Have those kind of affected how you go into recruiting players, especially at an HBCU? Has that changed any of the how you get the classes of players in?
It hasn't affected us as of yet. I do believe at some point it will. It's making the recruiting game a little bit more difficult. I've learned not to take things personally in regards to this. You know, you work real hard. You recruit a young man, you know, probably starting his sophomore year for us, and you get to know him, his family. He gets to your program. He does real well. He develops both as a man and as a player. And you, in the past, you would think to yourself, hey, I got in two or three more years, this young man will become possibly a Cal McGowan or All-American in your program, help you win a championship, graduate, all the things that are great about being a student athlete in college. And it's getting close to the point where you may not be able to see those rewards for your particular team because of the NIL deals that are out there, that after a year or two, a young man has an opportunity, and I'm happy for the young men who get those opportunities to move on to other programs to kind of help themselves now instead of waiting until after they graduate.
Yeah, and so I know you've been, every coach has really kind of faced this recently with COVID and everything going on, whether that's holding up roster spots or there's a lot of guys who have gotten a few extra years of playing. Has this affected your recruiting, and are the gates starting to open up now for kind of the backlog of recruiting now that some of these guys who had an extra 1 or even 2 years of eligibility due to COVID and other redshirt needs, is it kind of changed the game a little bit for you there?
This year was the first year that I've coached, and I really did not use a freshman. And I think it's going to be like this for the next couple of years, where you have five and six-year players. Usually you'll have a four-year guy, and sometimes you would get a five-year guy who would redshirt. But this particular year, we had 4-year guys, 5-year guys, and 6-year guys. And so for the high school kids coming up, there's not a lot of roster spots. And my advice to them is that, hey, if you find a program that is interested in you, you may have to take that first or second opportunity instead of waiting for something to happen later on, because with the transfer portal, as you said, the COVID issues that popped up where kids get a year, sometimes 2 years extra to play, it's not a lot of opportunities out there for the 18-year-old high school senior, because now in college we have young men who are 22 and 23 playing college baseball.
And we have a lot of high schoolers that come onto our show because we tend to reach out to the local kind of high schools here, the players, and reach out to them. What is the best way to get on like a college coach's radar? Is it going to Perfect Games, going to like the camps that you guys hold at a school, or is it like videos that you post online?
I think all of the above. I can speak specifically for Savannah State. Reach out to the coach via email. If you have any social media, let the coach know about your social media. Post as many videos as you can on your social media. But particular schools that you're interested in, try to get in touch with them early so that you can get on their radar. At Savannah State, we have 3 high school showcases that we do throughout the year. I typically average 3 or 4 young men that end up on my roster based on their performance at our particular showcases.
Yeah, very cool. So Do you have any teams that you like for the College World Series? I know last night we had Notre Dame versus Tennessee, that and it was an 8-6 upset, and even we had a couple other games on as well last night, a couple that went very late into the night, like the Texas A&M Louisville game. Was there any teams that stuck out to you that you were thinking might make it all the way?
I am enjoying having the opportunity to watch postseason college baseball. I enjoy this more than Major League Baseball. I think any young man who wants the opportunity to play in college should take the time out to watch. Division II College World Series just ended yesterday. But if you have a chance during this time of the year to watch Division I, Division II, Division III, JUCO, NAIA, I think all postseason baseball is really, really good. So I do not have a team that I am rooting for. I think my biggest thing that I'm rooting for is to have an opportunity to watch quality baseball and watch these collegiate student athletes perform on the big stage.
Oh yeah, we were stressing that earlier, saying how, you know, the College World Series and doesn't get as much respect as a lot of the other tournaments, whether it's the, you know, the Final Four, or the Elite Eight, or even the National Championship.
Oh yeah, as I'm watching these games and Division One, they're in the Super Regional, and you see the excitement from the crowd. Intimate environments, stadiums look like they're packed, whether it's a 5,000 seat stadium or a 10,000 seat stadium. In college baseball, some of these institutions, the fans are right up on you. So, I mean, it's just a great environment. I'm watching a game now, and the home team, you look in the stands, it's all their colors. And so that's what we're looking forward to having at Savannah State here in the near future.
Hey, Coach, Mike Rickard here, and I appreciate you coming and taking time for Ben Botham. Sharp young man. I'm very fortunate to have him in my world. And I would guess you're watching this East Carolina-Texas game that I'm watching right now as well. It's pretty. I love those stories when you've got, you know, the Pirates of East Carolina taking on the Titans like the Texas Longhorns. And I'm sure that you're pulling a little bit for the underdog in that respective game.
So in this particular game, I would say I have a rooting interest for East Carolina. During my early years at Savannah State, we happened to have an opportunity to go to Greenville and play East Carolina in this particular stadium. And I am a witness that those students that are out in the left field bleachers or behind the left field fence, they are very, very, very pro East Carolina and the program that the coach is running there.
Yeah, and I don't see a lot of that burnt orange in the stands. And I'm from Northwest Iowa, 90 miles north of Omaha. But I'm an old man, but we used to make the junket down to Rosenblatt, and that where they used to hold them, and there wasn't regionals in those days. Anybody that got in, you know, I don't know if we call it the dance, but let's call it the dance, would come and they would stay in Omaha for weeks at a time, and we would somehow, you know, we'd find our favorite teams, and if it was like, you know, East Carolina just went ahead. And we had a lot of fun with that and the passion. But now, you know, it's been watered down a little bit. It's regionalized, but I think that's good for the fans, as you said. What's your opinion?
I totally agree. It gives the way the game is being played now, it just gives more teams an opportunity to play in postseason. And as you're watching, for those of your listeners who are watching East Carolina against Texas, it's a mid-major against a Power Five, and it's a little bit different in baseball than it is in football and basketball. It's, you know, East Carolina has some some players just like Texas does, and they're showing in this particular game with the help of their home crowd that they can compete on a national stage. And there, it looks like they're a handful of innings away of making the College World Series.
Yeah, and Savannah State's a great A place. One of, I spent an amazing amount of time there, and I really came to love it. And I can't stress how thankful I am to have been on your program there. But we were talking. One of the things you instilled into us was, you know, kind of respect of the game, and you know how to carry yourself on the ball field. And one of the teams that really kind of hasn't been doing that, I think, is Tennessee, with just some poor sportsmanship and. You know, some of their players are just not that great. We have their first baseman who was flipping the bird off to, you know, the Georgia Tech team. What do you think about players like that and the coaching that goes into those teams?
You know, it's hard for me with being a coach myself. I think the coach of Tennessee does an excellent job with his kids. I think to a man, he has good kids. But, you know, sometimes, you know, you play with emotion, and we try to coach our guys up to try to control that emotion the best we can. But sometimes we get in situations, and I don't think that's the mark. I don't want to put a mark on the team or a mark on an individual, because I think they've had better moments in their lives than the particular moments that was seen on national TV. We would all like to be better, but I think the world was made by about giving people second chances and giving them an opportunity to redeem themselves. And I believe the young men in that organization over the course of time will show that the type of quality young men that they are.
All right, Coach. Well, I wanted to thank you for coming on the show once again, and hopefully I'll see you soon in Savannah, Georgia.
I appreciate you, Ben. Appreciate you, Michael. You guys have a good day.
Well, Coach, one last thing. So this young man comes from Seminole High School down here, and he's a submariner. And I tell you what, he's an old soul when it comes to baseball knowledge and experience, but coming with that delivery from the mound, that absolutely says he's an old soul, wasn't it?
Oh, yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. I had a pleasure to work with Ben, as I'm pretty sure he told you, for 4 years. We still have a good relationship. I was just talking to my dad before I got on the call with you guys and told him that I was, you know, about to have an interview with you guys. And he asked who it was, and I told him Ben about them, and he said, I don't recall that name. I said, well, Dad, he's one of the most pleasurable kids I had an opportunity to coach, because it didn't matter in regards to his personal achievement. He was all about the team. He played for us for 4 years. He graduated. He's getting his master's, and he's still around the program. So we love him. Any opportunity to have a chance to work with Ben, it's a pleasure for me.
Well, Coach, it's been a pleasure to listen to this conversation, and I'm going to turn over the mic to Ben eventually someday, and the old man will step aside because he does a superb job, and he's a heck of a lot brighter than my old carcass. And this has been a wonderful conversation, and I appreciate you taking time to join us on this Saturday. Enjoy the College World Series. There's a lot of action still going on, and it's kind of fun. I'm looking here at Arkansas is up on North Carolina, Virginia Tech's up on Oklahoma, East Carolina, and then tonight we got Tennessee, Notre Dame. Yeah, and now they got 6-2. Come on, Pirates. And then Texas A&M, Louisville tonight. Those will be some great games. So lots of college action to watch, and I'm sure you're going to have a great afternoon and evening.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
All right. Thank you very much, Coach. Thank you very much, Ben Botham. That was an excellent conversation.
Oh, yeah, Coach Hardy.
So when am I fired? When am I retired? I got another week left?
No, you got plenty of time. I'm busy. No, I'm pink, always doing stuff. You
no
know?
Pink slip yet?
No, not yet. You know, it's we have a lot of fun out
pull,
here.
Pull the trigger anytime you're ready, buddy. The old man's ready. Hey, I'm doing one more shout-out to a couple of our sponsors. And, of course, I'm going to get you some cards, by the way. You got to stay on me. When I say I'm going to do something, okay. That's why you didn't go to the Sports Club of Tampa Bay. You got to remember, I got ADD, okay. Age Deficit Disorder.
But can I give a shout-out real quick to my Nana? It's her 96th birthday today. So I just wanted to say happy birthday to her on the radio real quick.
Well, absolutely.
Yeah.
Happy birthday. You got great genetics, too.
Yeah, you know, she's going to be kicking for quite a while. I know her pacemaker doctor said, oh, it'll be good till at least she's 112. So, you know, we're...
Holy moly.
We'll be...
Many happy birthday, dear. Oh, my gosh. That's fabulous. Yeah, that trumps any promo here. But I'm going to get you some business cards from my buddy at Ace High Printing. Rick Herbert, he's the official printer of the Tampa St. Pete Sports Connection. On the T, Radio St. Pete. Sunshine 96.7. He does all of our aprons for our live remotes. He's just a humble guy. But here's some of the guys he's done business with: Kiss, Madonna, The Lightning, PGA Tour. You've seen this before. World Series. Just a superb guy. AceHighPrinting.com. Serving Champa Bay for 18 years, and that is Rick Herbert, 727-542-3897. One more shout-out. I'm sure that Barbie's got her ear pressed against the radio, making sure I did my job for her today. And she's our newest supporter. Barb with Champa Bay, Barb Grossenheiner, first-class real estate, Gulf to Bay. You can get a hold of her at barbwithchampabay@gmail.com. That's barbwithchampabay@gmail.com, or call her at 712-540-3704, 712-540-3704. That's Barb with Champa Bay. Give her a call today. Well, my man, thanks for coming down and bailing the old man out. Talk about a variety of topics, huh? How about that show?
Today was a great day. I mean, you know, lots of great guests. And, of course, I always love having my old coach Hardy on. You know, we've had a lot of fun.
What a great guy.
Oh, yeah. He runs a great program. And, you know,
he's got great pipes.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. We should make him our baseball insider. It wouldn't be bad. He's got plenty of great stories. He is.
How old a cat is he?
He's not too old. I know he played professional baseball with, I believe it was the Phillies organization back in his day. He used to tell me there was a Carl Jr. and Hardee's right across the street or something from the stadium, and he used to always eat there, and that was a place we never stopped on our road trips. We would never stop
he
there.
He had too many
he
of
said,
them?
That's it. We're done.
Well, it's grease and junk. He doesn't want his athletes doing it. All right, my man. Well, I appreciate this. We'll be talking, and... Your Savannah State gear looks good. It doesn't match your Sports Connection gear. I might have to get you an orange hat or something.
There we go.
All right, for Matty O'Brien, FSU former standout, that was fabulous. Mark Donahue, of course, we're talking Sports Club of Tampa Bay. Bob Bauer talking a little Tampa Downs racing. Chris Griffin, a little NIL, and then, of course, what were you, the Mighty Mighty Tigers?
Yeah, we're the Tigers. Welcome to the Marsh.
Yeah, Coach. Hardy and the Mighty Mighty Tigers, Ben Botham, Joe Bedrow, and Big Ed on the controls. I'm Rickard. I'm Mike Rickard. Thanks for listening to the Tampa St. Pete Sports Connection. Wishing you and your families a fabulous weekend. God bless you. God bless America. God bless Ukraine. And be sure to have a championship week.